Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. We're back after a longer than we expected hiatus. And we're back with a Celtic Are Knocked Out of Europe podcast, which is not always the most fun thing to do, but it's something that we're getting very used to here at Celtic. The debrief around the end of November, the blame game has started. Was it the players, the manager, the tactics, the board, all of the above? What was it that went wrong for Celtic in Europe this year? We're going to try work our way through some of those topics. We obviously can't go through all of them tonight. And we've already done quite a number of those things before, but we'll try go through the game last night and also some of the reasons that why we think Celtic keep failing on the biggest stage in European football. James and Alan are with us as always. We're live on YouTube. If you're watching, do leave a comment. Let us know what you think of the European campaign. Let us know what you think went wrong and what needs to be done to fix it. James, how are you?
I'm good. Our ability to try and get live here today was about as successful as our European campaign this season. But technical difficulty, so apologize to the people that were waiting for us to go live here. But yeah. good to be back after a couple of weeks. I joined the effort, if you can't tell, with my fair hair. And just the solidarity with you, Enda. I want you to know the level of sacrifice this is. Alan probably knows there's this married man social disorder called coitus interruptus that arrives. That's the Latin phrase for it. And with my wife, that's what a mustache does. So I've been suffering in many ways this month, Celtic, mustache, and coitus interruptus.
Oh, God, we're back, aren't we?
Oh, no. We start again.
Alan, you've been sick for the last couple of weeks, so that's kind of one of the reasons why we haven't been able to do the podcast. So you've been suffering in many ways. The game at the weekend, firstly, and then the game last night. So, I mean, it's not been a fun couple of weeks to follow Celtic. They have not been the most entertaining team in the world, to put it lightly.
No, for sure. I mean, you know, we'll get into the European game. I think the Motherwell game was a bit painful as well in many ways. So lots to unpack. So, where do you want to start?
Right, well, we'll start with the game last night because we can do the overarching theme as we go. But we'll start with the game last night. It was 2-0. It was a classic Celtic game where they were in the game for most of it, didn't really lay a glove at all on Lazio despite having most of the possession, and then conceded a pretty shite goal and then proceeded that with another shite goal again to lose the game 2-0.
Is that the shite double?
Yeah, I mean, like it's a classic Celtic way of doing things. You know, it's like waiting on a bus. You know, two always comes at once, and when Celtic concede in European football, they tend to concede 2 to 3 in a row in the space of about 6 minutes, and that's what they did last night. So, Alan, we'll put it to you this way: last night for me, and I've been quite patient with the team. I've said from the start of the season that, you know, you don't know what some of these players are going to be capable of until you actually get a good look at them for the full, fair, reasonable amount of time. Last night was, and the weekend as well, was probably like the hammering home factor that some of these players that Celtic have brought in this summer just aren't at the level that are needed to not only progress Celtic from where they were last season, but like to actually just maintain parity of where Celtic were in European football last season. Because like last year, Celtic had a really difficult Champions League group. It was, you know, Ange's first time in Champions League, so it was always going to be difficult tactically wise. But we had a go. Celtic had played two fairly bang average sides that aren't going to do anything in this competition, in Feyenoord and Lazio. And Lazio was probably one of the worst teams that Celtic have played in Champions League in a number of years as well. And they didn't get anywhere near them. So, Alan, like, in terms of standard-wise, there are a lot of players at the club at the minute that just don't meet the standard.
And I need to be consistent. And I don't feel like not being consistent, really, with what I think I said at the beginning of the season, which is we simply haven't got enough quality in the team to compete in a Champions League group. I don't really care which sides we're drawn against. And that's pretty much been borne out. So, I've been pretty, I think, if you look back, pretty sanguine about each and every Champions League game, because my expectations have been that providing we don't get absolutely drubbed and we kind of, you know, do our best, I don't see what more can be done given the quality of the player that's available to the manager. Chuck in a few injuries, which every team's got to deal with. We're potentially going to struggle. But again, I come back to performance. People, again, fixate on, 1 point, you know, out the group with a game to play. Obviously, it's a results business. I get that. But again, if you look at the performances, you look at the game yesterday, you know, I'm completely supportive of the way Brendan Rodgers set up the team and the way that they played, whereby he's trying to effectively defend with the ball. So rather than park 10 players behind the ball, play a low block, he's defending with a lot of, you know, possession that isn't really going anywhere. But, Lazio still had 20-odd shots with 45% possession. How much would they have had if we'd given them 60, 70% possession, right? So, you know, I've been doing a bit of digging in the last 2 weeks between sweaty flu outbreaks. And one of the things I've discovered is a little model that I've built, which essentially is expected goals and then outcomes, expected goals differentials and outcomes. So James and I go on a lot, and you recall, for example, last season we were waxing lyrical about Postecoglou and the fact that we were getting near to between 1.5 and 2 XG better than each team. More or less week on week, right? And when Celtic get up to that level, they're you can actually model it, and they're probably winning, you know, 90%, 90+% of expected points, let's call it, you know, that are available. So if you do the same, long story short, right, I did exactly the same for European games. And even where Celtic are getting to like +1, +1.5 XG more than the opposition in a game, the number of expected points that they actually achieve from that doesn't hardly change. So whether it's zero, whether it's near zero, or whether it's 1.5, Celtic win about 60% of the available points, if you want to put it that way. What does that all mean? To me, it means that Ange was wrong. It means that, you know, going all out on the attack, going guns blazing against teams that are, to all intents and purposes, of a higher quality, and taking the game to them, isn't gonna yield you any better outcomes, and that's the results tell us that in Europe over a long period. And so Rodgers is correct to do what he's done in all the games, which is to keep Celtic competitive for as long as possible in the match, and keep the games as tight as he possibly can for as long as possible, because then you as you get into towards the latter part of the game, you know, you're then looking for, you can you get that, do you take that one chance, can you get that break from a corner or whatever it might be, right? Now, in reality, of course, that hasn't happened. We kept it tight in Feyenoord. We basically nullified them in Rotterdam. And then, you know, the Joe Hart risk came to fruition just before halftime. And then the sending offs completely bollocks the game up. Again, home to Lazio, we kept in the game. There was nothing in it. You get to the last 10 minutes. We score a goal that's a fraction offside. They score one that's a fraction onside, and we lose the game. It's that could easily have gone the other way. and we'd be sitting here in a much different position. You know, we got a draw against Atletico Madrid, which you know, it was a terrific actually result, given the quality of that side. And obviously, actually, we played really well for 20, 25 minutes in Madrid. People forget that. We lost the early goal, but we actually matched them toe-for-toe with control for 20, 25 minutes until Maeda got sent off, and then it all fell apart. And then again, last night, if anything, Celtic were the stronger team going into the last stages of the game, and they don't get that bit of luck. That little bit of luck goes the other way. Now, Celtic didn't deserve their luck because, you know, there wasn't sufficient quality in the final third to force a mistake, to force that ball the way that it did for them in the last few minutes. But again, I come back to performance. Given the hand that Rodgers has, given the lack of quality, even versus last year's squad, I think he set the team up the right way. I think by and large, they played pretty well for most of the games. They kept the games competitive, apart from obviously the Atletico Madrid away in the second half. And therefore, I can't get to, you know, I've read so much hysteria, really, I suppose, online, and people throwing mud at this player and that player, Rodgers, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I just can't go there. This is exactly kind of what I thought was going to happen. I think he's done the best that he could do. I really do. We haven't got the breaks. Right. One other thing I'll add, and I think this is like a non-analytical thing, if you like. I think Celtic and Celtic supporters are kind of cursed by this expectation that Celtic have to play attacking football in each and every game. You'll need to look across the city to see how they play in Europe, how defensive they are. No sort of shame in that, right? No sort of regrets about that. And they get far better results in Europe. Let's be completely honest about that. By playing defensive football in Europe, it's the only way a club like Celtic is going to get points. The way that Celtic did it, I really like. We didn't park the bus. As I say, we played defensively by keeping possession, which is a really sensible thing to do. Postecoglou's teams just ran out of steam because they kept giving the ball away, because they kept trying to score a goal, and then the other team just kept it, and then hit on the break. So, right, I'll stop there. But yeah, I can't join the hysteria. Sorry if that disappoints people.
What about you, James? Do you buy into what Alan's saying there?
Yeah, generally, yeah. Nothing's really changed since the first game against Feyenoord in my mind, which is we kind of went in. I framed it as a litmus test, meaning that I don't think we could have had a more friendly draw in the group. There might have been one other group that was kind of, you know, plus or minus in favorable pot construction, so to speak. And we have been competitive. I had my head down while Alan was talking because I got caught on a call and I didn't have a chance to put some numbers together I was looking to do. So I just added up the non-penalty XG when it was 11v11 in the game so far, and it's 2.28 to Celtic to 4.19. Right, so that's what you would expect given in a good scenario, meaning that keeps you in a puncher's chance environment, which is all we can ask for, given the state of the squad, given the injuries. I don't think we've really learned anything new since the Feyenoord game, other than reinforcement that I think that the coaching staff put, you know, again, you can quibble on little things. I think there's some reasonable discussion about maybe shape and going into the game with the players that were available and maybe experimenting a little bit. But I don't think that's black and white, man. There's a huge room for I think reasonable disagreement there. And you only really, you know once you try it, so to speak, that kind of thing. So I think we've been competitive given what we have, but what we have is just nowhere near good enough. And I think Alan's point at the end there is of vital importance, meaning that, and this is why I think both of us, and I know I can speak for myself, harped on the issue of goalkeeper position in Europe so much, is because you have no prayer given this circumstances unless you have a keeper that's going to win you a game or at least win you points. And, you know, we just haven't had that. And again, I don't think Hart's been terrible. But, you know, we need the kind of performance like Bruges got from Mignolet last season that got them a second spot. And, you know, they ended up getting obliterated in the knockout stages anyway, which, again, that's going to happen. I mean, that's the whole point here. It's we're not likely to make a deep run. It can happen. You never know. But we're not likely to make deep runs in the Champions League. It's, you know, getting up to that next level and to become a serious kind of late stage Europa League level. Obviously, that's all changing next season. But that tier of club. And yeah, similar to Alan, it just all kind of went the way expected. And I'd say on a slight nudge on the upside as far as how well set up we were and, you know, generally speaking, how well we performed. I was expecting even worse, 11v11. I mean, I thought we actually held our own, for example, in that Atletico Madrid game, far better than I expected.
There's a lot of discussion going on in the comments below about the game plan. And Alan, you mentioned the way that Ange played versus the way that Brendan played. I'm going to throw in the sort of the negative style game plan into that as well, in that you park the bus. All three of those game plans come with the exact same risk, in my opinion. It's, you know, it's various different types of risk, but it all comes down to, are those players good enough to actually get a result here? Because if you go out to park the bus, you're being overly negative. If you concede early, or if you concede at all, like, what's your plan B there? You've gone out to get a draw and you're not going to get that. So you have to attack at some point. With Brendan's style of play, where he's trying to control the game, control the possession, avoid giving away too many chances. Again, that's still quite a negative thing. If you concede early, you're still sort of going out with the intention not to score. You're still sort of going out with a passive sort of game plan. And then with Ange's style of play, you go out all guns blazing trying to win the game, but you do gas very early in the game and you end up making yourself vulnerable. So I think ultimately it comes down to your players. Are your players good enough to get a result here? And I think Celtic's players at the moment, I mean, I never like going too personal with these things. And this is not dig at him, because I think he's been a great servant to Celtic and probably underrated if you look back at his career, but James Forrest should not be starting for Celtic at this stage in the Champions League. That is a reality of where his career is at. It's sort of, you know, it's about 2 to 3 years since he should have been realistically starting. And I know that's down to injuries and stuff. But I think the mad thing here, Alan, is that we've ended up with a situation where James Forrest is starting at left wing. We've got Yang starting on right wing. He's probably a third to fourth choice winger at best. Greg Taylor is still starting. Bernabe, the left back, just doesn't seem to be existing on the planet anymore. Joe Hart is still starting to go. Scott Bain is still Celtic's backup goalkeeper. We have an extraordinarily big squad. It's like 36, 37 players at this point. And you'd probably say maybe 5 of them are good enough for the Champions League. You know, like, even the backups aren't good enough to be backups at this point, Alan. And I'm not going to say that we're back to square one in terms of the squad development, but I mean, it seems like we probably are a little bit. Like, we're almost back to like the 2020 season now, where it just looks like we need to get rid of about 10, 11, 12 players and bring in, you know, 6 really good ones.
Yeah. Listen, you look at the team that played that night, and I think should be starting a Champions League game. Right? What chance have you got? 5 players out of, it's less than half the team, I think, should have been starting that game. I was astonished that we actually got to 82 minutes and we're actually looking like we might even nick the game at that point. That's the benefit of staying in the game and having that control. I know it's not thrilling, I know it's not exciting, but, you know, James Forrest played one forward pass, completed one forward pass. Right. Yang, to me, if you'd picked a 15-year-old out of the academy and thrown him in, you wouldn't have got any better or worse performance. He looks like he's learning how to play the game, frankly. So I don't want to go through them all. We know the ones that are just, you know, the wing positions have been a disaster this season, absolute disaster. I was just looking there, you know, between them, Palmer and Yang, who at the moment are our first choice wide players, have provided four chances for Kyogo so far this season. Four. That's it. All season. Four shots Kyogo's had off of passes from Yang and Palmer. What chances he got? Right. We haven't, you know, we talked a lot at length, at tedious length, about Rio Hotati, but my goodness, do we miss him now? Because we haven't got even close to Rio Hotati's level to come in and play as a number eight. I think Bernardo has been a revelation in the sense that, as I say, off the ball and defensively, he's actually excellent. He's athletic, he gets the pitch, he fills gaps, he's where he should be, he gets interceptions in. He's like Matt O'Reilly without all the creative stuff. But you need that creative stuff. You're going to play as a number eight for Celtic. You know, Bernardo has completed three passes for Celtic this season. Three. And that's astonishing for a number eight that plays for Celtic. That's just incredible. You know, Holmes been given a chance. And, you know, he looks a really gifted footballer, but he just hasn't taken this chance. He's not found a way to influence any of the games that he's been in. He's not found a way to get on the ball. He's not found a way to make a difference to the team. So suddenly, you know, you're looking at your four creative positions, O'Reilly, you've got the two wingers, and you've got the other number eight. And three of those positions are at best erratic. I mean, Palmer's put in some good performances, but he's also, you know, been awful. I mean, he, you know, gives the ball away for fun. In fact, he's on for setting the record for the final of any player that we've had since I've kept records. Because when you play for Celtic, you can't just play like you did, like Palmer did against Aberdeen, which was an outrageous performance, and then do nothing against some other week. You can't do that. That's not good enough for Celtic. You have to have that level of consistency. If you look at Jota, right, and you look at his expected goals plus expected assists in each game, there's not a big variety. You know, he was consistent. Yes, he took a lot of risks. He gave the ball away a lot, but he also created a lot. And that's the level you need to get to play for Celtic. And we just don't have that in the wide areas. And we don't have it in the key attacking midfield areas. And that's before we even get to the fact that, you know, again, bless Liam Scales, played really well for 80 minutes and then just exploded in the last 10 minutes. And guess what? You lose the game. But that's the risk that you're carrying. That's the risk. You know, the same with Joe Hart. As you know, we were doing great in Feyenoord until Joe Hart can't get across to a 40-yard shot. We knew about this risk. Guess what? It manifests itself. This is why I can't get agitated, especially at Rodgers and a lot of the players. This was always going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not to be Liam Scales' PR man again here, but there were a couple of occasions when Cameron Carter-Vickers let his man at the back. Like the first goal last night was Cameron Carter-Vickers. It wasn't Liam Scales. You know what I mean? Like there are also moments from
it felt perfect. I mean, you can't.
He doesn't track him. Like, I mean, like, you know, we also have to question some of the big performer, like big players in the Celtic team, like Cameron Carter-Vickers, like Matt O'Reilly, like Cal McGregor, like Kyogo. Kyogo, I feel sorry for, because he's being stifled by the system a little bit. If the wingers aren't creating, then Kyogo's not getting on the ball. But Cal McGregor's been poor in the last couple of games in Europe. Cameron Carter-Vickers has been at fault for a couple of goals as well. So, like, as much as this is a quality issue, there is also the age-old issue of Celtic's best players not performing when they really need to do in Europe. Like, that has also been an issue for Celtic over the last couple of years. Their form in the Europa League versus their form in the Champions League, it's the exact same thing, the exact same issues, even though the quality in the Europa League is much, much worse than the Champions League. Like, there are issues with Celtic in Europe that I feel is a psychological thing, but we'll come back to that at some other stage. There's one comment in I just want to touch on really quickly. It's from Ewan Boy Martin, and this isn't a dig at you, by the way, so I'm not, it's just the general overall mindset about Martin O'Neill. So he says that Martin O'Neill had the perfect system for us in Europe, 8 big physical players who can defend and bully the opposition with 2 or 3 quality players up front. Martin O'Neill's Celtic team were on par with the European giants. they had quality players. They had world class players.
How many points did Martin O'Neill win in Champions League away games?
Yeah, but like
lost every other game.
But I also think this isn't, by the way, Ewan, it's not a dig at you by any stretch of the imagination. It's just the mindset in Celtic, the expectations around them because of Martin O'Neill's European exploits in the Europa League or UEFA Cup as it was back then, has set a really unfair bar of where Celtic are at in reality for European football now. They are not on the same level as they were back in the days that Martin O'Neill was in charge. They don't have a world-class striker, a proper world-class striker in Henrik Larsson, who would have slotted into the best of the best teams. And he went on to win the Champions League 2 years after he left Celtic with Barcelona. The year after he left Celtic with Barcelona, he went on to win the Champions League. Like, Celtic are not at that level anymore on the global stage. And the sooner that Celtic fans accept that, I think we need to readjust our mindset and where we should be going in Europe. But that was a rant that wasn't necessary on today's podcast. Can we talk about bringing in players? Because I think 20 Minute Tims did a poll on what was most to blame. And it was like, I think it was like 89% or something said the board in terms of the transfers and the people brought into the club. And it's an interesting one. The question around the quality that's coming in and how do you predict how they're going to go, James? Because like Celtic brought in what you would put in quotation marks as development players. For example, like Holm is a development player, younger players that are, you know, expected to develop and go on to do great things. And some people were saying about the transfers that Celtic should be aiming for better quality ones like Jota and Edouard. But when Celtic brought in Jota and Edouard was playing on loan at Toulouse, having not made an inroad into the PSG senior team. He had 16 games.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST. Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For Toulouse, and Jota had played 16 games on loan to Real Valladolid, who were at the bottom of the La Liga, having just coming up for the second division. He did make it into the Benfica senior team, having had a really decent underage career. So how do you predict the quality of the players that you're going to bring in as development players? How do you know which ones are going to be the Jota and Edouards versus the Yangs and the Holmes of the world, or the Bernardos, for example?
You have to be smart. And, you know, the red herring that you're not going to be perfect. Well, of course, I mean, your hit rate is not going to be 100%, but it's about marginal improvements to move a coin toss to 75% or to 80%. And to also build in, I can only use the term that I'm familiar with from my background. It's convexity, meaning that you need that ability to have, when you do hit, it's not a bunch of Carter Vickers, who is as good a player as he is. He's not going to end up getting sold for $40 million, right? He's may end up being a solid player that we sell on to a bottom half English Premier League club, that kind of level. And maybe, you know, my guess would be maybe 10 or 15 million, something like that. You need to be able to build in that convexity of someone, you know, like an Edouard of a talent and pedigree level with, the athleticism that maybe develops and you sell at the right time. And maybe the team has a little bit of success to have some of that shine on the players. Right. So you have to have that kind of perfect storm, so to speak, and then repeat it. You just have to get smarter at doing it. And, you know, as you guys know, I do this benchmarking exercise, and I've been singing the same song ever since Ange arrived, which is it hasn't really shifted that much. I mean, outside of a couple of guys that Ange knew or guys that his agent knew, like Kyogo, you know, recruitment just has not been good. And that Ange Ball kind of, and the dynamic of Ange Ball versus the domestic league, masked a huge amount of these kind of longer term issues. So it sounds simple, but it's very complicated. I mean, that you just have to get smarter and have quality of people identifying talent and bringing them into the club and pipelining it. And my big issue, the last thing I'll say, sorry, is that and I talked about this the last couple of years, is that the industry is getting more efficient farther down the age curve. And that it's harder now than it would have been 2-3 years ago, meaning that, you know, as you've seen with Ferguson going to Brighton and, you know, some of these, the big clubs now are buying and playing 18, 19, 20 year olds. So it's going to be even harder now. I mean, for Celtic to be thinking that we're going to be buying a bunch of 23 and 24 year olds that are going to have that upside, I think is borderline ludicrous. I mean, there will always be outliers, but generally, by the time a player gets to that stage that we're going to be able to afford, and given our proclivities right now or lack thereof as far as talent identification, I just don't see the hit rate in that age group being. Now, you need quality there. You need, you know, consistent of a level. But we've been missing on that level.
Yeah.
You know, Haksabanovic, Oblegaard. I mean, some of these I'll call middle-aged. I mean, here I am a 48-year-old calling 25-year-olds, right, middle-aged. But in the modern sporting environment, they are middle-aged. And that is very difficult.
Well, that was actually going to be my follow-up question for you, Alan. Tom Brady says that the price will tell you that Edouard came in for $9 million, Jota came in for $7 million. They didn't. They came in on loan. Like Celtic brought them in on loan, a loan to buy, and then when they were good enough, they spent the money. It wasn't a situation where Celtic spent that money. And also, the price doesn't tell you. Barkas cost $5 million. Ajeti cost $6 million. The price doesn't always tell you whether a player is going to be good enough. But Alan, like James sort of touched on this. How do you identify a young player who's good enough that hasn't already been snatched up by the better clubs? Because the reality is Celtic are playing in the SPFL against, you know, really poor opposition. They play six games in Europe every season, maybe more if they're lucky, if they go through into Christmas time European football. Their wage structure is much lower than, you know, low level championship in England, and their scouting networks are much smaller than the Portuguese sides, the Spanish sides, the German sides, the Dutch sides, the Belgian sides, the English sides, the Scots, and so on and so forth. So how do you know that you're going to get talent that are young, that are going to have loads of upside, and are also not already being tracked by the biggest clubs who can pay you more? Like that's a really tough job.
It is, but we've done it before. And again, as James said, I think scouting in the younger market is becoming increasingly difficult. The sophistication and breadth of networks and the willingness of some clubs to invest heavily in very young players means that for Celtic, that's a very high risk market, which is why I come back to my observation of what works is, and what has been successful for Celtic is in this market of players that are probably 20, 21, 22, 23. They've been at a big club. They're not going to get in the first team, but they were good enough to be under consideration for where, they're playing football. They might be considered to be highly rated, like Jota, for example, but the manager might be, I could put him on the bench, but I'm not sure he's going to play a lot, type of thing. And there's a sweet spot there of players that what I'd call the natural wastage in elite level football, where they tend to sort of stockpile a lot of players in these clubs, the big sort of top five leagues. And of course, they can't play them all. And comes a point in those players' careers, and mainly I would say in their early 20s, where reserve team football isn't going to cut it anymore and they want to play. And they're willing to come to a club like Celtic at that point, in theory. And that's where we got Edouard. That's how we got Jota. That's how we got Carter Vickers. Now, there's different, to your point, there's different levels of evidence that are available in the sense of Carter Vickers. There was a huge body of evidence. He played championship football in England for 3 or 4 seasons. No problem at all. Jota, like you say, 16 games at the bottom of the La Liga. What does that tell you? Edouard, a few games at Toulouse, but they were elite clubs, and there was lots of age grade football, was under 23 football, within their local league. So, the English Academy League, etc., the development leagues and so forth are reasonably competitive and what have you. And you can get access to all those things now. So there is that evidence, and it is a case of being smart. So we come back to, how are we set up to succeed? When things like you go out of Europe and everyone's disappointed, everyone lashes out. And I've seen all this, we blame the board, or we blame Peter Lowell. Well, listen, let's get a couple of things straight, right? As far as I can see, I would get rid of the Celtic board. I'd get rid of every single one of them on the basis that they've all been there too long and it's just poor corporate governance and the club needs fresh blood. So let me make that straight for a start. But the board is there to set the budget and provide the resources to the various departments for them to operate how they want. That's been right. Now it's over to the football question. So to the football question then to decide to work how they're going to work within that budget. And I've seen no suggestion that Brendan Rodgers or anyone in the football department thinks their hands are tied behind the back as regards resources, as regards transfer funds, and as regards the wages they've got to play with, right? So let's put that to bed. It's got nothing to do with the board. Recruitment, it's got nothing to do with the board at this point. If they're not setting sufficient budgets, that's a different story. And let's just also put the Peter Lowell Aunt Sally to bed as well, right? Now, again, I will never forgive Peter Lowell for the Resolution 12 debacle. That was a line that he crossed there that there was no going back for me on that, right? So that's hopefully very clear to everybody. But if you think Peter Lowell is meddling in the football department and the football operations, come to DM me, email me. I'm easily found. Show me the evidence, because nobody I know, right, around the club has got any evidence that Peter Lowell is meddling in any way in the football operations. So again, let's put that to bed, unless anyone's got, as I say, got any evidence to the contrary. So what does it come down to? It comes down to the football operations. Ange asked for a lot of upgrades to Lennox Town, both to the facilities and to the capabilities there. And that, as far as I'm aware, that's either being delivered or has been delivered, right? We do have all of the trappings that you'd expect from a modern football club. What comes down to me, that again, that's the board modernising the football club in that sense. We've given long contracts to players that Rodgers wanted to keep. So it comes down to the talent that's operating the software and has the contacts and is talking to people, agents, scouts, and what have you around the globe. Are those people doing the job in such a way that, we're identifying and bringing on board the right talent? And the evidence of the last 6 months is no, they're not. And to me, it's that simple. So at the moment, the people responsible for those operations are not doing the job properly.
Yeah. Does it not come down to the board to have the overall vision for the club and the plan in place that they get the right people in those positions in the first place, though? Like, I whether Mark Lawwell was the right person for the job or not, by the looks of it, he got the job based upon an Ange recommendation. That seems to be the most recent bit of information that we're getting from the club. Or at least that's what they're saying now at the EGM. Does that not come down to the board? Is it not their responsibility to put the correct people in place under a correct plan? And James, it doesn't seem that there's any coherent plan in place at Celtic to bring it forward, other than hoping to get the recruitment right 1 year in order to bring in enough money to improve the recruitment the following year. It doesn't seem to be any sort of strategy. It just seems to be throwing as much shit at the wall and hoping to see what sticks.
Yeah, I think the board is a, in my view, is a euphemism for Dermot Desmond. And I think where there's accountability there is it seems like he's had an aversion to kind of a true modernization of football operations. I would argue a bit of a Neanderthal view of the industry. And I've joked in talking about, one of my patented cross sport analogs in Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. I see a lot of similarities there, how he's run the Cowboys since acquiring them. Took a very successful operation that was being well coached and well drafted, and basically, I wouldn't say destroyed it, but it's been a long, long road of mediocrity. And so I think that is the part that is overhanging, and let's just call it what it is. There's obvious elements that we don't know because we're not insiders, but there's obvious elements of nepotism. There's a culture of the boys club that, the jobs for the boys, that's all part of the culture that's been there. And I don't want to characterize that all as like 100% negative. There's admirable qualities to, taking care of people or having people that are part of a community and a sense of camaraderie and an organizational culture, that kind of thing. So there, it's none of this stuff's ever black and white. But ultimately, those two elements are the elephants in the room. Desmond's lack of modern vision and him injecting himself into hiring a manager as God model. I would probably guess there's been some internal fighting. I don't think Don McKay gets hired unless there was some pushing and pulling as far as maybe, some people within the club or even within the board trying to go in a different direction. And I think this has kind of been that direction. We half-assed this with bringing in Mark Lawwell, given his pedigree, at the Citigroup. And cosmetically, for people that don't really have a strong, progressive, forward-thinking, strategic view, this would kind of be a half-assed way to do it. And that's what it looks like to me. I think that does rise to the level of the board. But ultimately, as Alan's saying, like on a day-to-day basis of just like doing your job well, that ends at Nicholson. I would doubt that the board members are getting directly involved in any level of day-to-day operations. The people that are in those roles, whether there's something that's going on there, and again, being relatives is the obvious part. Day to day, I don't think these guys are meddling in it. I just don't think we have whatever it is, whether it's culture, talent, it's not happening in a decision-making basis to get the level of quality of talent in. That's not something that's new. This is, I would argue, really since it started with the 10 in a row season going into that season and the incoherence of that transfer window. And we really have been getting worse since then. I would argue if you look at our overall talent level, we've been descending on a total talent basis. If you look at our team from when Brendan Rodgers left to now, if you look at kind of just basic talent levels, I think we're materially lower than we were in 18-19.
Hmm. This is a very boring sort of solution here, Alan, but Do you think an independent reviewer bringing someone in from a club across Europe to come in, sort of like what Ragnick was supposed to do at United? Obviously, you're not going to get the likes of Ralf Ragnick to come in and do it, but like an independent reviewer from a club that set up a successful model, hire them in, see what's going to happen, and then follow their lead on it. Do you think that is a way down the road for Celtic? I know, obviously, that would take a lot of onus on the board to give up some of their positions, because I would imagine some of them would be tossed out quite quickly. But in terms of, like, I think the quick solution is bring in better players. But I don't think that's as simple as people like to think of. Oh, Celtic have 80 million in the bank. They can just go spend that. That doesn't mean, like, you know, you could give me 80 million. What am I going to come back with? You know what I mean? I have no expertise in these industries at all. So, like, there's no point in having all this money if you don't have people who are going to spend it wisely. So what do you think of that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you could spend 800 million and be as shit as Man United. I mean, this is the risk in Champions League football, unfortunately. So it isn't just a case of throwing money at it, right? There was somebody on Twitter who was asking for, again, this is going to sound really boring, but bear with me. They were asking for the structure charts of football clubs of what their organisations look like. Now, this is the sort of thing that gets me all excited. And there was a few came in, I looked at them, and of course, they're all completely different. There's no commonality about roles, no commonality about structures, reporting lines, anything like that. So what is the point of what I've just said? The point I've just said is that, right, there isn't a magic formula here as regards if we implement this blueprint organizationally that we're going to suddenly have a fantastic football club. It all comes down to talent. And I keep saying this, in a football club, it's not a big company, right? I know Celtic hire a lot of people, but 90% of them are match day operations people or heads off, right? You're going to have very few heads off in the organization, right? So the organization success is going to hang off the talents of not much more than a handful of people, right? Maybe less than a dozen for sure people, right? In the organization at the strategic level are going to set the tone that's going to basically dictate the success of that football club, one of which will be the football manager, one of which will be the CEO, right? Head of recruitment, et cetera, et cetera. Right? There'll be a few key roles, right? And you've got to get the right people in those roles. And you've not just that, they've got to work together. They've got to get on professionally at least and all be pulling in the same direction. That's a whole new, different set of situations as regards kind of egos. So this isn't an easy thing to do. There isn't a magic blueprint that every club's following on this. And the culture of every club is different as well. So what the blueprint will be for Celtic will be unique to Celtic because they have to work with and around Dermot Desmond. Again, how many clubs have got a major shareholder that essentially, you know, has no day-to-day executive authority in the club at all, yet seems to sort of have an incredible sway over key decisions of the affecting the club. So someone's got to operate within all of that, right? And where I am at the moment, I'm settled, is that we don't have sufficient talent in the key operational positions. I'm not calling out any particular individual. I think in a general sense, I don't know Michael Nicholson at all. I believe he's a very capable guy, but he's a lawyer, right? I wouldn't have a lawyer as a CEO. I wouldn't have an accountant as a CEO. So there, straight off the bat, I think we've got the wrong talent profile in that absolutely critical role, right? A CEO should be a strategic person, a visionary person, not someone that's worrying about risk all the time. That's what the risk officer's for. That's what the head of legal's for, etc. That's number one. You know, we have got an excellent football manager, right? Head of recruitment, Mark Lawl. Again, I don't care what you call him, Lawl or not Lawl, right? He's not a scout. He's not a football person. He's a manager, right? He's a manager. You know, I think James gave me an excellent article back here in Dallas that describes what Mark Lawl's role was at Manchester City. He was there as somebody who coordinated other scouts and recruitment people across the city.
Yeah, just to clarify, you don't mean manager in the football sense. You mean manager as in like a day-to-day business manager.
He's a manager of people, a manager of processes. He's not a talent scout. He's not someone that's going to spot you know, some kid in Senegal and say, oh, we must sign that person. He will know somebody in Senegal who might know somebody who to talk to. He's that kind of guy, right? He's not the guy that's going to find the player. And yet he's the head of recruitment. What is he actually doing? Who's actually spotting the players, right? All of that. So again, I don't want to fixate on individuals too much, but the evidence of my eyes in terms of the recruitment over the last year is that we don't have the right talent in key positions. I don't know which key positions. We might have the best sports scientist in the world. I don't know. But it, certainly it's from recruitment perspective, we don't seem to have the best talent in those key positions to get, you know, the bang for the buck that Celtic need, which is to be able to try and put a competitive team out so that our 30 million that we spend over two or three seasons is going to give Manchester United's 800 million badly spent at least a competitive game.
Right, James, last word to you because we need to wrap up here. fast forward 12 months. Are we in the same position next year?
I don't think so. I think that as I read the tea leaves of what Rodgers has been saying publicly, I would be surprised if he doesn't get more involved in what's been going on. I mean, it seems to me as if, because we talked about this when he was hired, right? I think one of the first things I said when either in the show that we did when it became a serious rumor or when he was actually announced is I joked about my poor Irish accent and saying pace and power. And that I thought that our squad was horribly misaligned with what Rodgers would look for in a team. And our recruitment window did not rectify any of that. So I have a very hard time believing that, you know, this summer window was a strategic alignment of Rodgers' style of play with the type of player that makes sense given his style of play. And importantly, looking to take us up that next notch to be competitive at that, you know, getting over that hurdle against better competition. So, to me, one of two things are going to happen. There's either going to be some kind of power struggle because whoever was making the decisions this summer doesn't want to give up power, or, you know, whoever that is, because again, we don't know. Or, you know, Rodgers is going to assert power, which I think is the more likely scenario, given the fact that he was brought back and that, you know, his profile as a professional. You know, if it was Enzo Maresca that was brought in, or, you know, it's one of these other guys, I would say probably not. But given who he is, I just can't imagine that this is going to continue along like this. That's not to say that it's going to be like an ideal scenario, but I took some, you know, bullets in doing threads on how ridiculous the Kwan signing appeared to be at the time, given the benchmarking analysis that I had done. You know, give the guy a chance and all this other stuff. And, you know, I wrote a similar one when we signed Ablegar. It's like, are we signing this guy to turn him into a center back? Because otherwise this makes no sense. You know, so there's some Lagerbilk did not make a lot of sense to me. It still doesn't when we signed him. So there's just a level of basic, in my mind, analytical vigilance that hasn't been done. And I just can't imagine Rodgers won't address some of that to get us to a level of proficiency that will be a material improvement. Doesn't mean we're going to get to where we want to go or, you know, the ideal, certainly. But I just, starting in the winter here in January, and then probably more importantly next summer, obviously, I think there will be a material change. I think there has to be, or else, like, yeah. I said, otherwise there's going to be, all hell will break loose, because that means some kind of like interscene power struggle at the club.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think we'll park the show for this week because I have to run and get a train. Frankly, we could talk for this about this for hours otherwise. But St. Johnson on Sunday. Looking forward to that one. Yeah.
Craig Levine's St. Johnson. Get that straight.
Can't wait for that. That's gonna be fun. So
get ready for the bus to be parked. I think is the.
Oh, I can't wait to watch Celtic pass the ball backwards and sideways and in a circle for the next for 85 minutes on Sunday. Until then, we will chat to you later. Thanks to everybody who was in the comments. Keep them coming. And thanks to Alan and James, as always. We'll be back with the podcast next week looking at how many passes Celtic had at the edge of St. Johnson's box and how many shots they got from those. And looking forward to it. We'll chat to you then. Good luck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.